Channel 2 over. In the beginning of the visit was Wade with Rick. This Sunday afternoon, 15th of October, 72. Channel 2 over was beginning the visit with Wade with Rick. This Sunday afternoon, 15th of October, 72. Channel 2 over. Beginning the visit with Wade with Rick. This Sunday afternoon, 15th of October, 72.
I was saying he could buy it 35 cents an acre.
Yeah.
We didn't have. I don't want anything.
No, thank you, guy. I'll just drink some water in a minute.
He didn't have 35 cents.
Well, I had the tape thing all set up Saturday morning, but by God, I was out of town. So, that Ebling blood guy is right strong thing. Ran into it foot first the other day. You know, you went down and talked to Glenn about the tapes, and she said no.
Right.
Well, I went down and talked to her, and she was balked a little bit, and finally said, well, okay, you can take them. And I tried to explain to her that the person to be getting them had more tapes and taped more than anybody I'd ever known. And had a respect for tapes and wasn't going to throw them around. That didn't seem to help.
No.
And so Saturday morning, Friday I went down. Was it Friday? Thursday.
Thursday.
And there she was, and she was in a black mood. Face shows it.
Yeah.
Just picks it up and reflects it. When she's happy and smiling, she's a decent looking girl. But she had a shrew appearance on her. So I asked her about the tapes, and she backed down. Didn't want to let them out.
And I said, don't matter about that. I wouldn't worry about them anymore.
And I said, well, you know, what are you going to do with them? She's guarding them.
Yeah, she's guarding them.
First time tapes have ever been made, and they'd never use them again, as far as that's concerned, because they've already transcribed from them. But by God, she wouldn't let them out. Said we'd come over there and record them.
Yeah, that's what she told me.
Well, maybe she would call him for us.
She said she would. I said, geez, that's a lot of sitting around to do, eight hours to sit over here in this office.
Well, she don't have to stay with him, just turn him on. Forget about it. You don't want but one, do you?
Just that July 3rd meeting, that'd be enough. Because August 3rd, I bet all down. Because that was a hot meeting, and I didn't know what was going on. See. And that was the meeting I like to work up.
Well, anyhow, I thought it was interesting to see that Ebling spirit crop up.
Yeah.
It just popped like that, came like rolling out, and I called her. I forgot whether I called her a damned old Ebling or what. But I called her an Ebling. I said, yeah, you Ebling.
Does that loosen her up a little?
She was just cantankerous as all get out.
And just a child.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's 20, I reckon, something like that now. Married and still a child. At least the youngest kid acts that way, too, now. It's just coming out strong in him.
Need a boy.
Yeah, Evan spirit.
Well, is that what it is?
Oh, boy. I'll tell you. It's a very strong materialism streak. It has to do with possession.
Well, I was just looking for neatness and order.
Well, that could be true. But in this case, the thing I'm noticing in these got kids anyhow is that see it's a possession thing about those tapes. They don't have the slightest use for those tapes.
No.
None whatsoever. But it's an ownership, possession, domain thing. That's very strange.
Yeah. I guess they're not even town
from. And the little kid comes over this morning and first thing he says to George Wade before George Wade even say two words. See George Wade's keeping a guinea pig over there. And the agreement is he's supplying food for the guinea pig. And Hal comes over this morning and says, that guinea pig's eating too much now. He used to not eat very much, but he's costing a lot of money. He's just eating a whole lot. He's probably eating a dollar a day worth of food. And he just, this little fart, like so big, coming out with this kind of thing. You know, and he gets the most serious look on his face at times like that. He just sort of hardens over. He's telling, and George Wade says, well, I'll get some food. And he says, well, that's okay.
and he relents. It's not quite hardened in him yet.
Oh, goodness. Oh, the thing I forgot to tell you, one of the most interesting things that's gone on, is Mrs. Ward and Mrs. Heron are running for town council.
Don't tell me. Mrs. Ward
and Mrs. Heron. And when I was over there, I think it was Mrs. Ward that called up at the office, and she wanted her own personal private poll watcher.
Mrs. Ward?
Yeah. I don't know what they got afoot. But I'll tell you, when Hilton showed up at the first meeting, the one I missed, the regular Monday meeting, first of the month, and the next week, there he was.
The next week?
Yeah. Well, it was last Monday.
What was that?
A special meeting.
Called?
Yeah, it was. Oh, yeah. It was all proper.
Didn't you tell me about that on the phone?
Yeah, that was. I got there a little late. They must have started at 7.
Cause everything went business like the new order until the very end.
Yes, it was right boring until Heron really. I really caught on to what was going on, and Heron's there to stop. He's like an oak stump in the ground, and you see. Troy was chairman, and he had to. He would entertain a motion, and then sometimes Heron would make the motion. And then Troy'd have to pass the chair to Heron so he could second the motion, because the chairman can't second the motion. And then they'd say all those in favor, and Heron wouldn't say anything. He'd say, "I can't vote because I'm chairman." So Troy would say, "Yay, motion passed, motion carried." He's, he one vote, motion carried.
Oh, Eddie must not have been there.
No, Eddie got sick or something. He couldn't make it. Of course, the last meeting, he went to sleep, and wasn't too much good anyhow, even though he was present.
He had that trouble all along, didn't he? That first time we went, they looked over there and asked him how he felt, and he wouldn't say one word.
Yeah, Eddie's all right. So he just, he's worked too long, I reckon.
Yeah.
If he's not working for $1.75 an hour, he's at a loss.
That's right. They're not getting anything. Are they?
No. He can't operate outside of that world.
That $100 bonus is not going to hit not the same thing.
Oh, that's an illusion.
But
the tree ordinance was the funny one. They got into that tree ordinance. No, Joe Thomas, he really is. He's carrying the ball. The mayor's report was about 8 hours long. He had a stack of things this high, and he was going into one thing and the other. And it came down to the tree ordinance. Says, "Well, we've had this tree ordinance here for about 8 years, and hadn't been put into law yet." And there was various and sundry discussion as to why. And so he takes it upon himself to feel that the tree ordinance should be read. And any one of these ordinances are boring. They are boring, because they go through all this ritual first before they just say, "We want to take care of the trees."
They don't give you the heart of it, do they?
Whereas, live oaks give shade. Whereas, and they go on through this. Whereas, they're pretty. And whereas, but anyhow, he read part, and Troy read part, and it's all a very sensible ordinance. And protect, because they planted these live oaks about 150 years ago, something like that. Of course, old Bill Proctor, he says that he remembers when those live oaks were this big. Bill, he's breaking 50. Those pretty big trees for 50 years old. Bill's good storyteller.
Yeah.
He's rich. And anybody to grow a live oak tree in 50 years as big as those, he's got to be a good storyteller. But Anyhow, he...
Oh, you mean he talks?
Well, when he's drunk. Oh, good Lord. He was... He got on to me one day, something fierce out there on the bench, and wound up, says, see this arm here? See that? Look at that muscle. And he's still... Do you know what... You know that arm that's on Arm & Hammer baking soda? I said, that's it. They photographed that arm. Paid me $10,000. That was just part of the whole thing with him. But they got this, Joe was trying to push the tree ordinance. And he tried to get it into, well, let's see, how did that work? They started discussion before any motion was made. They were just talking about it. And Troy's sitting up there trying to run things. And he said, well, Mr. Herron, how do you feel about that? And Mr. Herron says, I think that a man ought to do anything he wants to if he owns his own property. Just flat out, just like that. And then Joe crops up.
You could see what had been in his mind all the time.
I said, just blockheads. He doesn't have a mind. But Joe really hit it on the head. He nailed it in there. And he said, Mr. Herron, do you mean to tell me that if I own a piece of property, I have the right to go out there and dig down 150 feet and then leave that hole right there? And he says, he's real quiet for a minute, and he says, if a man owns his own property, he ought to be able to do anything he wants to. He says, I don't know of anybody just going around just tearing down oak trees. And I says, I sure do. And everybody cracked up. He said that, and the whole thing started off because of that oak limb that got ripped down, see? And that's and Herron has the audacity to get up and say, I don't know if anybody just has gone around and torn down an oak tree.
And furthermore, according to this is the only information I got out of Robert's rules, they did that all the way down to 441.
Mm-hmm.
It took them a good while to get down there.
Oh, a long time. About all afternoon.
Yes. Cutting off limbs.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Stacking them on the side of the road.
Now, he said, now, what was the connection to that scrap of paper? Herron said to him, the charter, just a scrap of paper.
You weren't there when they said that.
Maybe that was a meeting
that
before.
That was a meeting
No, you
it.
Told me. Oh, you told me.
I told you that.
Oh, yes.
That was when... That was when he got on Troy. He wanted to know how they held a meeting with two members present. And Troy explained to him the rule of rational men, which is when two members quit and then you've got three left, the quorum is two. And Herron said, well, I guess town charter is just a worthless piece of paper now. And that was the first time I'd ever heard him speak up at all.
Oh, he's speaking up now.
And I... That's why I was surprised. I didn't even think he'd come to meetings anymore after that.
Well, what's that? They lean on the charter?
He's never read that charter.
Yeah.
Herron hadn't.
Yeah.
He hadn't
like
had the foggiest idea what's in that thing.
That's talk like they talk about the Constitution?
Yes, their own personal rights. And that's it. Oh, what? Well, it's a real funny thing that went on there that something had happened in prior meetings, and Herron said that, well, he didn't know anything about that. And old Joe, with his really strident voice, comes in and says, just how many meetings have you attended in the last 3 months? And just ratted down on him. He just really nailed it.
Did you get up to the... center up there, what's the name of your compound, Murphy compound?
Oh, yes. Yes. I suppose I start Wednesday night with one class, and something else may develop in the meantime. I'll get one off the ground anyhow. So that's at start, and probably one's about all I really should do,
yeah.
To tell you the truth. I mean, I'd, in my wildness, I'd be trying to do five, and
yeah.
That wouldn't, shouldn't do it.
All you need is a tow home?
Yeah. Yeah, we had about 12 people show up Thursday night to talk about it, and I think they're mostly all somewhat interested in it.
Yeah.
And I made up a little questionnaire for them. They're mostly young freshman type. I think they can be taught a little bit of something. I don't know.
What?
They could be taught a little bit.
About what?
About photography and whatnot.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, don't tell me.
It'll be a good, photography would be a good thing to teach. You can do a lot of teaching with it.
Oh, yeah.
It's that tangible thing that you can work with. It's
yeah.
Not abstract.
Yeah.
And you keep your hand on a tool all the time.
Yeah. Yes, sir. Got something to show for you know I've used mine.
Yeah. Might even be over to university next year. Just ran into Dan Branch and he says they got money at the architecture department. So wouldn't hurt at all to get a half time job over there for money. Well, I'd continue with other things.
Well, let me tell you, what's wrong with the buildings and grounds, as we used to say. See, them fellows make good money, Wade. Cookie was making $3 an hour, and when he got sick, operating some of the equipment, and you see, once 6 months, and you're on for life,
mm-hmm.
and you keep going up, and there's nothing to it. When you come home, you're refreshed.
Yeah,
I don't know why I hadn't thought about that. You see, you could get on tomorrow as a janitor.
Yeah.
Well, you see, they call them
custodians.
Yeah, it's custodians now.
There's some better name for that too. It's
security guards, no.
No,
sanitary
I mean
sanitary engineers.
Yeah, sanitary engineers and some other.
Well, you don't care. You're not proud. You don't care what they call it. And you see, in that you get Social Security and insurance, and,
mm-hmm.
and you can take off any day you want to over there. They do. All you gotta do is work in with the crowd you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, you can go to Valdosta to the horse show.
Yeah. Well, this thing I'm talking about be teaching the architecture students, architectural photography, about 2 or 3 classes a week.
Yes, I know, but you got those flatheads to deal with, you see. And the other, you'd be spared that. And don't take my experience a little bit, you see, they're way out.
Yeah, I can foresee that.
Oh, yes. What you want is something over there that's you see, you work yourself dead at home, then you go up there and rest.
Yeah.
No matter what it is, it's restful. Now, that's the way it is at present time. And if you'll just say Mr. to several of them, you see, and talk to them like, you see, they're important, they'll scoot you right up. Go over and operate a bulldozer. You don't care what you do. That's my great mistake, you see.
Yeah, that's Ed Hoffer approach. Of course, he really had a good one, that union card.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right. And he didn't use money, you see.
Uh-huh.
Takes you so much money to do business, you see, you can do business.
No, I've got to get out of that. That's walking backwards.
Well, look at me. It cost me $1,200 a month to run this place out here, or live. And what I have to show for it, nothing. Cost me so much to do business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's everything. Cattle, automobiles, all of it.
Yeah, got to cut down on that. If I can get this building loan right, I'll have all my living quarters and everything free and all my debts paid for free.
How do you manage that?
I'm trying to get a $16,000 mortgage on the building and pay pay out about $200 a month on it, and the $16,000 pays off all my debt, including the building and cars and camera equipment and everything.
Yeah.
And I can get better than $200 a month rental out of it and still live there and still have my office. Can't beat that.
No, you just keep your stay at home and quit meddling other people's business.
If I about learned one thing that with my attitude and mind, if I don't have the cash, I shouldn't get anything.
you see who the business people are, the people you're talking about across the street.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I saw it. I talked to Buster the other day, and I told you about that. And he had that true story.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I told you about that. And there he is, you see, in the old world, standing on his own scaffold. That old ratty, rusty, scaly paint. Right across him, you see, is spotless, swimming pool.
He had the whole crew out there doing that. You know, a couple of carloads of professional painters out there and chipped that whole thing down. It is immaculate.
Yeah.
And that's something across the street.
Yeah.
Still, he's the one that breeds all the flies in town. It's good.
Let me show you. This this came in from Debbie. Do you know Debbie? She came out here and rode horses. I was always condescending to her. She was a little black-eyed, docile girl. I'll tell you what. She's not docile. Now, she's been out of school 3 years, and she's been on her own. I mean, she's had exposure, like we were talking about.
Uh-huh.
Constant exposure. She hadn't hung around the house at all. I mean, she can move.
And she went to Europe on her own.
Oh, yeah.
Beverly brought home 2 nurses. By God, they did that. 2 girls. They just took off. And just one of them stayed over there 9 months. Now, they made their own money. And just went hoofing around Europe,
yeah.
You know. And both of them are bright girls, you know, got a good spirit to them.
Now, she was coming back and worked with me, and I thought she'd be here about the middle of the summer. But she prolonged her stay over there, and then when she got out here, she didn't come out here. She was, I don't know what she was doing. What she said was she just visited, and she had so many people call her. Then when I thought she'd come out here to settle down, and she did one of the most beautiful things I ever saw on her godmother, sleeping, just went over there and knocked it off. And she disappeared again. She said she'd be back in a month or two. It would just take her that long. She had to do it. Didn't they say why? But Faye saw her up there at the... just run into her on University Avenue that one day, she and her mother, and both of them were just hollering and just great laughter, you see. And they just talked, and he heard from her, not a word from her in a month and a half, so not a word. And you see, I've been in constant touch with her for since last August,
mm-hmm.
a year ago, constant. All the time she's over there in France, we heard from her. The trouble with looking for jobs is that you get them eventually. They can read it better. Yesterday I was offered a very good job with one of the hospitals outside of Boston. As assistant public relations director, riding the house organ, doing 2 TV programs a week on closed circuits. Now that's too much light.
This isn't sure.
might be good. There were bad aspects, of course. It didn't pay anything. And way outside of Boston, I took 7 buses and subways to get there and back, and 2 hours both ways. I'd have to live there or make substantially more money so I could afford to take the commuter train. They just couldn't pay me much at all. The one thing that was good was for my ego. He hired me on the spot. And that was flattering. My mother has always said that I'm a lucky person. Sometimes my luck is just overwhelming because I can see the underlying luck. This way, by deciding to refuse this job and come back to Florida, I don't have the crutch of being able to say, well, I couldn't get a job anyway. It's a free decision.
That's good.
I don't want to work in a little hospital in Norwood with Ivan Fleischman, who said when he saw on my resume that I'd studied in France, Parlez-vous français, filet mignon, Brigitte Bardot? And thought he was being so cute with his carefully booted feet resting on the desk. So I'd be sure to know that he was sophisticated and had a way with women. Casually asking if I were married, engaged, seeing someone. What nonsense. He grabbed my hand a little too strenuously when I left.
Now he's got a mindset, ain't he? Either.
It's just as well that I don't have to cope with him. I want to learn to write. I want to learn to write well. After 2 months, I think I have finally come to grips with that. 2 months. Well, it's been the last year. It took me a while to withdraw from friends. Than to face the fact that I might really be able to write. And then to face the fact that I'll be in debt. I don't have any money, so I'll have to get some kind of job in Gainesville. That's part-time in the hospital. I don't really mind working for the medical profession. It's vaguely rewarding to be surrounded by all that white. What I saw in the last few weeks was that I'm losing everything that's really important. France, the countryside, both in New England and Florida, Greece, London trams. I'm even losing my books, my reading. I remember that when I was in college, one of my favorite professors used to say that the overruling theme in modern American literature was lostness. Now, I'm not sure what abstraction he was putting over on us, but I don't want to be lost. Or to write lost literature. I want to be there. I want to be there and positive and joyous. It's so much nicer just to be happy. When I first came up to Boston 3 years ago, I believed what I was doing when I looked for jobs. Now I just don't believe it anymore.
And that's a point of conversion, I'll tell you.
And I can't even muster up that dewy-eyed innocence that I had when I interviewed. I get angry because everyone who has a job to offer me is so damn slow. And they're causing my world to slow down. Now, Deborah, this is such an exciting time for you to be joining our company. It makes me want to scream every obscenity that I know and some that I don't know yet. There she goes.
Sounds like she's off and running, guy.
Well, let me tell you.
Yeah,
that just percolated, didn't it?
Yeah. You can look at it. When I get a document, you know, something with some spirit to it, I have to stay with it. And you think, well, he never got one before, but that's not it. Well, he gets hipped on these things. But you see, I don't see things quick. Now, from this little thing here, I've seen several things. I've ridden it right in the ground. I've seen several things. One is that Debbie has all that exposure, and I actually didn't give her credit for that. She hadn't been close to home. She's been all everywhere. And all the time she's used the language at the typewriter. And even French, she was using the language as such, you see. So it's almost like what I was calling to Rick about once. In the old days, you had a cub reporter. He might not know anything or learn very much, but he was using the language all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there were other things about it, too, that I realized now I didn't before. So you see, she's more muscular than I dream. Now on top of that, she's got a profession. She's got a trade. She's a assistant public relations director, and anywhere she goes, she can get a job. They'll put her on just like that, in such demand. Now, on top of that, what I need in here is that. And I didn't know it before. I've been just, you see, I suffer. I sweat these things out without enough advice. I don't have enough information going. You see, I've got a hell of a lot of writing that needs to be done. And when I think about it, it tires me, there's so much of it. And I said, well, where can I get somebody to do it? Well, it has to be from a certain point of view. With certain, well, they've got to be pretty bright, you see, in order to do it. Well, let me tell you, the world is full of bright women who can use the language. But there are not any men who can. I don't know why it is, but I don't run into them. You see, it's just bugging me. It's just worrying me. It makes me lie awake at night. I want to get this thing off on Mac Weaver. I feel indebted to him. He talked to me hour after hour. And all he wants is to get in print while he's alive and can see it. And I keep postponing it. nothing would please him so much as to just get the picture of one of those dogs in the paper. And I don't put it in. Well, and I got Louis Nealon up here. He's the Forrester man. He's a square. You see, he's a hardwood man in a world of softwood forestry people. So he's been on the outside since he was middle aged. Earlier. He'd been on the outside since 1930. And I've got the stuff to do it with. I've got all the stuff to do it with. All I need to do is go out there and follow him around and look at the trees and let him talk. And I can tape it and come in here and put it on paper and publish it. And it'd be a document. You see, I can't get loose. I got too much of that other foolishness, you see. And Debbie could do it. Any of these little brilliant assistant public relations directors could do it. All I got to do is line it out for them. And you see, in here, actually, she writes better than I can.
That's well done.
And furthermore, it's spoken English. And I wrote it to you, part of it, as spoken English. Don't you remember when I said 2 months?
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way she wrote it. It's spoken English, you see. And there's not a professor up there. There's not a man on the whole damn campus up there who can write spoken English anymore. And furthermore, they can't even speak spoken English.
Mm-hmm.
All they speak is like Eric Severide, written English.
Yeah.
And it's very hard to understand. I want to learn to write. I want to learn to write well. After 2 months, I think I have finally come to grips with that. 2 months. Why, it's been a whole year. You see? It's right there. This spoken English. So whether she comes or not, you see, she's helped me with this. Now, a long time ago, I learned to see people in their writing. But it's still slow.
When I first started off my business, I'd write my business correspondence letters, just talking away. And there was one firm in Jacksonville, every time they'd see a letter come in from me, they'd just drop everything. They'd start reading it, pass it all around the office. And I used to have more fun. I'd give reports on taking the pictures and what I ran into and commentary on it and stuff. But I had to quit. Got people confused. I lost a whole lot because I got sort of too personal with some guy, and he misread me totally. So I got down to the cryptic. All I do is write speed letters. You know, the little pieces of paper that said speed gram. And it's got the copy stuff in the middle, and you just type it up and rip off one and send it and file the other. So I've got stacks of stationery left over. All I use is that speed graph. But they really did. One of the girls told me they really got a kick out of that, and I had to quit it.
Yes, it's shameful, isn't it?
Yeah. And I'd get involved. Hell, I'd spend 2 hours writing a letter to them. It's not even necessary to write one star, but
yeah.
I loved it.
Well, that's it.
But if you're talking about business now, generally the business never gets done in that circumstance. They can misinterpret things and read them backwards, and the business sense doesn't work. Oh, I ran into a fellow over in town today. I'd like to bring him over, if you wouldn't mind. It's Broward Hunter or something like that. He started in school about 62 or so. And he's not mechanical, some sort of an engineer. And we got fell into talking a little bit.
Can't talk.
I don't, he's not as much of a talker as he'd like to be. He's just realizing.
That engineer mentality is too tight.
He's just realizing that, well, he's not an engineer. He hadn't worked in years. He can't, he said he wished he, hell, he'd done something else, because every time he gets into one of those jobs, they kill him. So he's one of, he's an extremely quiet person, very, very reserved person. But he brought it up himself. What fascinated me is there are two things that you need, and that's craft, and then it's the ability to talk, learn to talk about this tangible thing, like just like the hardwood man. You can talk to him because he knows it's hardwood.
Yeah.
That's his craft. And the people who don't have that, you don't have any way to communicate to them. And I mentioned some of the what we've been trying to work on a little bit, and he got right interested, right fascinated, because he'd never heard of it before being done. He said he'd never heard of this kind of thing happening. And he sees he can see it, because he can't do it. He can't talk. I mean, like, from experience. The whole thing from experience. The whole business.
The, I tell you, my own point of view, right now, I don't need to see anybody. I need to get a hold of somebody that can get me loose from the routine up there, where I can just put all my time on this for a couple of years. And I'll sign off. But I can't do this seemingly and have all that distraction. And you see, I don't have any distraction. Mostly if I have it, I create it. But I can't wait, man. Can't do it. Well, all summer, what slowed me up was that I had to go through this bibliography. I simply had to know some of what had been done the last 20 years of some of these people. And it was hard. You see, you have to cut into it. It's so hard. You see, you got to see the man all over again. And then they were putting him in a light I didn't care for.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite painful. I didn't want to see him that way. But I have to. I have to see him the way they see him. They doing what the best they can. And, well, it's helpful if you live forever. You can't know everything.
Well, I don't know what's the best route to try to break loose. I keep thinking about your famous interview with that character at the university. The one you and Rich went to see, Rick. That's the tone. I don't know. I think you have to go way beyond that to make anything in touch with anybody.
Well, now this is, you see, you can use this for all sorts of things. All right, here's the person that's got all that fire, you see, and meanness in it. What you going to do? What you going to do? You say, all right, well, how's you going to use it? Just forget it. Don't use it. It's rich. Open things up. I see you just go over there with Harry Cruz and write you a nice little short story.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. She doesn't know how to write short stories. And a short story won't hold much anyhow. And by the time she gets proficient in that, you see, she'll have to get burnt all over again. Or they'll say, well, you're just going to have to, you just can't face all this. You're going to have to make it a little easy on yourself. You just take a few of these graduate courses and you can get a job where you don't have to fool with Irvin Fleischman. Now that's the two answers to the university. You just channel all this eruption into a little half-inch pipe of a short story.
Mm-hmm.
Or else you subdue it all just by hitting yourself on the head, you see, with all that graduate courses.
Really amazing how that pervades our mentality.
Yeah.
The idea of if you're going to consider doing this, you got to box it up, put a ribbon on it.
Yeah. As if there's nothing in between that she could use it for.
Yeah. This damn sure got to be boxed up somehow.
You see, Ms. Rawlings in Cross Creek didn't use either one. She didn't take any graduate courses or didn't write short stories. In Cross Creek, she didn't. That's the only thing it's read now, except by children who read the little fiction. There's nothing in between. Fiction is very difficult to write, and it's very difficult to read. There is simply no assurance that you're reading it right. And it's such a long process. And the way they do it now, it's so cerebral. You don't have any leather stocking stories anymore. It's all T.S. Eliot, all that great mentality.
I hope they're climbing down off of that a little bit, aren't they? I should say.
That's what you got. Or else you can go to community college, you see, and go in for service. Work out to have an institution for the reform or the aged or something like that. Take some of the people without opportunities. Out.
Yeah, they gave the lighthouse business to the Coast Guard. And these lookout towers, you have to know somebody to get in those now.
Oh, really?
And, I mean, you have to, well, of course, Lottie, I think, is probably the last of the line of people.
Yeah, she'd be the last of the line.
Yeah. I mean, you have to be the Forestry Service, and, the Forestry Service is, I was talking to one of them yesterday, he lives, just as soon as you hit the prairie, coming across the prairie south, coming down here, he lives on that bluff on the left-hand side, house back about a half a mile.
Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't find a better place to live.
Mm-hmm.
But he says you've got to be clean-shaven, and his hair is shaped up, and he was telling me all about how it was, and they toe the line. Straightforward people, and he says, you know, they're waiting in line to get in this service, too. You got to be sharp to get hired on. So that's where our fire towers are going. Can't hide out there anymore, either. Sit up there and read a book and look for it.
Yeah.
Old Sinecure, that's sort of outmoded now from the Sinecure. I think welfare probably did that.
Well, you know what, the little girl down there, this is a constant thing, down here in Tampa, she's in Red Episode with me, and, well, she never really made contact, but she was a nice man, Shofi. S-H-O-F-I, or some such thing. Big girl. She says she was, didn't think she'd stay in journalism. Well, I said, what in the hell do you want to go to here, journalism? Why don't you just get your little newspaper somewhere and start writing for the newspaper? And she says, you got to make a living, haven't you? See, she's tied down with that wages and hours thing. She couldn't even cover the the police beat, unless it was so much an hour with Social Security. I see all these old timers, all these people with fabulous backgrounds, like Miss Glisson over here. Oh, there's no telling. It's just endless what that woman knows and what she's done. And you talk about language, she's got it. But they're not accessible. The young people can't do it. Can't listen. It doesn't have to pay them wages an hour and then have to give them transportation and have to...
hospitalization?
Yeah. Maybe credit.
And then she'd have to break it down into a training course.
Yeah.
Get it in a syllabus.
It's a shame old Jake got so ruined by business. He's got a well under him that wants to talk and relate experiences, but the business ruined him.
He's big shot now.
Oh, yeah. He's got a Corvette.
He talked to the senators. Direct.
He took that talent that you talk about, and he's made money with it.
Yeah.
But it's not the same thing that you're getting here.
Yeah.
But you can see him overlay it.
Well, you see, he wanted money, and I didn't.
Well, that's what he makes his money on, is that the beginning of this kind of thing.
He takes a little bit a long ways. I remember getting an old vaudeville man say that. He says, you've got to use the talent you got. You can't just keep improving yourself.
Take what's at hand.
Go from there.
So that's his mother you're talking about, Miss Glisson, Jake's mother.
He's Jake's right gifted. I've heard him talk a little bit. I didn't hear Jake much, because I wasn't tolerant of his long-winded talk.
Oh, he's long-winded.
Yes.
Woo.
And I wouldn't listen to him. I won't listen to intelligent people. I won't give them. I won't give on them. I'll give to the others. They're not going to want me.
Well, Jake's done an awful lot of things.
Yes.
And he's been in some shenanigans.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And he loves to talk.
Well, you could. He'd talk to you, but I don't want to hear him.
Oh, good Lord. He was that crazy guy's making a living designing house trailers. Just talked his way into it.
Yeah.
He didn't know a damn thing about house trailers and design anything else.
Yeah.
Talk about this public relation thing. That's what he was into, and that advertising stuff. And he's got some real royal stories about pulling the wool over people's eyes.
Yeah.
They're out there talking to people in a big, big monster deal out front, and he's trying to introduce his staff. And he'll bring them out one time, take them through the door and out, and sort of redress them and bring them out. You know, stuff like this. I mean, the whole time they're making up the whole story in the back room and presenting it piece by piece as they're cranking it out, like they've been working on it for 6 weeks or a year. And get just absurd. big business. You know, they're talking about big accounts. It's all facade. Oh, the PR. I know what. The government campaign. I think you said something about him being stupid too, not too long ago. But good Lord, his organization—if he gets any votes at all—it's a wondrous thing. This little girl, there's a couple that rented my place and living in it, and the husband's a graduate student in photography. And pretty good fellow, by the way. I mean, he's got some interesting aspects to him. He's not general run-of-the-mill type character. And his wife's a little slight. Girl, sort of a Bostonian, has been. She's got a degree in advertising or something of this nature, and's worked in advertising firms up in Boston. Has always been a city girl. She said, "Hell, I took a cab to work every morning." And she's been. Matter of fact, she owned up to Beverly. She just stopped crying about a week ago from being so lonesome down in Micanopy.
And it's a terrible change to get out of the city and come move to Flesh Lake Micanopy. And I'm sympathetic with that because I've met people like that. I've met people that have actually gone crazy from moving out of the city. I mean, it affects them bad. You can't handle it. But anyhow, while she was in town, they were trying to get the apartment ready out in Micanopy, and she didn't have anything to do, and she went down to McGovern Quarters. And she wrote, what are the job descriptions, or did something. Just cranked out some words for them, and hung around there. Well, comes time last week, the selecting their, they decided to work in three areas. Black people, elderly, black people, and poverty people. Don't ask me why they split up the blacks and the poverty, but they did it. So all of a sudden she gets a phone call. They said, Bridget, you're now the head of our poverty campaign in North Florida. She says, oh, really? I don't know anything about poverty. She doesn't know the first person in Micanopy or Gainesville, has never in her life been poor, has never been a politician, she can't drive. So they said, well, come on in, it's time for a press interview. Don't worry, everything's set up. She says, well, all right. So she goes in there, and they've got some lady who's been a club woman for 83 years working with the elderly. You know, I mean, she knows every elderly person probably from Jacksonville to Miami. And she had a beautiful prepared statement. They said, don't worry, just then they throw the microphone at him. She had a prepared statement. She knows all the ins and outs, the what's and wherefores of the elderly problem. The black man was none other than Neil Butler. And then they put on this little dried up girl, Bridget. Well, I think Neil said it all and quit. That was so funny. They got her ahead of the poverty. Said, I'm new to poverty, she said. Had been in it too long. I don't know what makes people do things like that. Goodness.
Now, where is she?
She's living downstairs in my building.
Downstairs?
Mm-hmm. What used to be that shop.
Yes.
I fixed it up and moved in it.
Yeah.
And he sort of, he used my lab when he wants to. Poverty chairman.
Ebling moved into Micanopy, didn't he?
Yes, I think about 10 years ago, I believe.
Has he been there that long?
Yeah, his kids went to Micanopy school. That's 11.
I was just thinking, it's like a new order has taken in over. And Buster will ride Ebling, not a name, but you know that's who he's talking about.
Oh yeah.
But I never hear anybody talk about Russell Woodard. Or,
well, Russell was at the meeting the other night.
Oh, he was?
Are they going to run him down or anything?
No, I've never heard him.
He's pretty. Who said he is a preacher?
Oh, I did. Buster, it wasn't Buster. Somebody sitting on the bench with Buster. Russell's a right straightforward person.
Yeah.
You remember you mentioning some of the talk around here is all public talk?
Yeah.
You get that feeling from Russell that he's just open from here right on up. Just the solidity of his voice and his delivery, and when he says something, it just comes out.
And you don't think the preaching will run him?
I don't know. If he gets too serious about it, I reckon it would.
Well,
oh,
he hasn't been doing it that long.
I don't know.
It'll take long unless they get into it.
Yeah, he gets some of that moral fiber stuck in his crawl. Choke on it.
I think there are a lot of hazards. the person not to get tied up with those things.
But he moved in. He hasn't been there that long.
Russell?
Yeah.
I couldn't give you a history on him. I'm assuming
it's like, it just looks like there's been a turnover of some kind. Hilton's been there. I know Hilton's been there a long time.
Well, there are wards. And Hilton's are old time people.
Thelma Myers.
No, Thelma's not. That was one of her biggest problems.
Oh, she
has. Oh, yes. She's an intruder. And intruded a little bit too fast before anything was ready.
Yeah.
See, she was mayor and councilman.
Back she was mayor?
6 or 7 years ago, when she'd only been in town 6 or 7 years.
Yeah. Just like a newcomer coming in and they give you a lecture or something.
Yeah, and then she tried to change things, and that's when they said, well, you just hang your head up. You've had it. Sure enough, she had. Out she went.
Yeah,
that's the bar told her to sit down. He'd tell her what to do. He's on the show.
Yeah. I was thinking she'd just been there quite a while, cause she'd been on that council.
Mm-hmm. I think she's been there 13, 14 years now.
But she's running out.
Yeah.
And then she's got Miss Ward against her. And Miss Heron?
Miss Ward, Miss Heron. Well, you got to hand it to these people. They're not going to just sit down and quit.
I thought this was all
I know. We did too. Until the day Heron showed back up. When he showed back up, I said, uh-oh, something strange is going on.
Well, you look into that other side of the campus environment.
Yeah, there.
I mean, just look into it.
They make some of them $7,000 or $8,000 a year, something like that sometimes. I don't know what Harry Wood's making. Of course, he sort of married to his job, and that's hard on him. He gets worn out at it.
Oh, really?
He's working with peanuts, and he's pretty high up and without any degree. He's in that double bind. He knows more than most of the people there.
Yeah.
He doesn't have the degree or the prestige to let loose.
Yeah.
And sit back a little bit. He's always out proving.
But he can publish and sidestep that.
I don't think he has the ability to publish.
Well, he doesn't have to. He can get a public relations assistant public relations director. And just tell her what to say, and she'll say it for him. Well, they got out something on Louis Nealon, and it's such crabbed prose, it's disgraceful.
Oh, his crazy wife should be able to, but she couldn't do it. She's an English teacher. I don't think she could handle a word.
Mm-hmm.
His wife, Harry Wood's wife.
No, English teachers don't know anything. Public relations people do.
Yeah.
See, they pound the typewriter. See, they overcome that. I wished I had a little country music.